welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Whoa. Well, anyway, we normally have been hearing on Friday evenings. This would normally have been the 27th of April, Aries, and 2007, but I think the show might be switching over to Sunday night, so then therefore it would be the 30th of May, April. So I'm not sure when it's going to be played, but we had a great guest last week in Mr. Golden. He's awesome, and the great Tibetan chants. You want to go back and archive that. It's all going to be at the festival up north that we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks. Can you believe that? It's only 2 weeks away. We've been promoting this thing for 6 weeks. Also, we are going to have Randy Masters on Saturday night. Now, you might be listening to this, and it may have already been on. So anyway, we'll see how that goes. Today, we're going to continue on. This is all the system stuff that we're doing. It's very important to get it all, and I'm queuing it up. And that might be a slight replay from last week, but that's only because it's important. But I don't think there's very much. It's all new material. And you're saving a lot of money by getting this free from bbsradio.com. And Dr. Fred Bell, he's warming up his spaceship and getting ready. On into May, of course, we're going to do a live show with Steve Barish probably weekend after this. Then the weekend after that, we'll have another guest, and then we'll be probably not doing that show, or we'll do it live from the conference. We'll see what happens on that one. So anyway, I do think Dr. Fred Bell is warming up here, his spaceship. A lot of activity out there. People all around me are sighting ships here nearby Laguna Beach. It's everywhere. Lots of sightings.
During this time, they're not being used. But during the time they are being used, they're converting all the negative energies and processing
seminar
all the negative
series continues.
The Omnion by itself is also used as an internet projection and communications device. And it can be used with one irradiator or seven irradiators, or in this case, four irradiators. Next thing we always tell people, the best place we find is to put the master crystal is directly below the Omnion in the center of the system. Because during the full moon, when the master crystal is receiving a lot of negative energy, the Omnion, which also has crystal in it, will be pulling out this negative energy out of the master crystal so that the master crystal can function, cleansing the energies as they come through and putting more positive energies back out. And during the full moon is, of course, a time when the master crystal has to work very hard at doing this job. During the new moon, the master crystal has got plenty of excess energy. It doesn't need the Omnion, per se, so you can swing the Omnion up and out of the way on its pivotal arrangement. Now, usually what people do is with the master crystal in the center of the system, we'll start to program for other crystals, what we call amplifier crystals. And these amplifier crystals will be placed in the vicinity around or surrounding the master crystal. And eventually you'll find that you'll have several large crystals similar in size to the master crystal, but like I said before earlier when I talked about crystals, you don't want them quite as big. But the system will attract automatically the kinds of crystals that it wants and will reject the crystals that it doesn't want. And this takes a period of a year or two, but it's really fun once the process begins at this crystal rearrangement and arrangement into your life. I mean, it's a great pleasure to watch this process going on. Usually also in the room, we'll have other amplifier crystals placed at different points. And we have a thing called a choke. And if you were to take a carbon atom and accelerate it up beyond the speed of light, it would collapse upon itself. Normally a carbon atom is an octahedron, but as it approaches, it begins to collapse on itself, forming like the Star of David. To imagine what that looks like, you would just have to take two pyramids, put one right side up and one upside down, and then compress them. Imagine what they're because of the bases, it would be hard to do this if they're the same size, but imagine one pyramid going inside the other one. Collapse on each other, the upside down one and the right side when they merge in the center. You'll see four different areas in the four corners of the two pyramids forming another set of triangles, upside down and right side up triangles. If you were to fill that in, you would end up with two sets of octahedrons, four sets of octahedrons, one forming in each corner as the outer carbon atom collapses. This represents the geometric progression of the interdimensional transition of the carbon atom into the fourth dimension. It actually speeds up in its energy field and forms another shape. At the point that you have these four configurations forming in each one of the four corners, you would choose the direction which you and aim your consciousness into that direction, and that would be the plane of dimension that you would move from, because the fourth dimension is a key to a fifth dimension and other different kinds of dimensions. And once you had gone into, pick the north corner, the north quadrant of this collapsing carbon atom to merge the consciousness into, it would come up in a multiple speed of light. It would now be an astral shape, and it would start to collapse as you went to another multiple speed of light, and you would move again in that direction. This way, it begins to form a scalar process, and you begin to mechanically move through the galaxies of space and time. Now, from here to another complete different solar system might, on the physical plane, take hundreds of light years or be hundreds of light years distant away. But when the actual physical transition of the way the fabric of space is contained, this collapsing and building process might move you just slightly to the right or the left, and you would cross great distance in space and time, because you've gone down inside the evolution that you will reduce your energy field to smaller than the size of an atom. In this configuration, you become a fabric of something else. Then when the process is reversed, you restructure yourself somewhere else in this fabric, and you end up in this universe completely across the space. This is why when we talk about flat space, negatively curved space, and positively curved space, it has to deal with that. So we developed a device that goes on in the radiator that represents this configuration. It's called a time choke. And what it does is it speeds up or slows down the scalar transiting frequency, the scalar waves transiting frequencies, meaning that although scalar waves are timeless and they move through space and time, you can affect their movement and their distance, the depth of their penetration into the fabric of space with this type of choking apparatus. So when you have one of those, you put it in one of the four radiators, and then of course the entire system is geared to work in this manner. Now the next system or configuration that we get into is the system 3, which we use seven radiators. And of course, seven radiators using in a system 3 is going to be a little bit more difficult and cumbersome, so you're going to need a little bit larger area, but of course the results are quite a bit different too. In a system 3, for example, you would go into the center of a large room and draw a compass or an imaginary line from the north to south pole along the face of the compass, which is pointing to the north and the south. And you would draw an imaginary line out to the edge of the room, as far out in the room as you could get. And when this line intersected the edge of the room, you would call that T1. And that's where you would place your first irradiator with its Megor base lined up to magnetic north, and the irradiator now facing the center of the room. Then what you would do is go back down to the center of the room again and put a protractor along this line at the point where the compass was sitting in the exact center, and draw off an imaginary 52-degree line. A 52-degree line would be the angle of the pyramid, and now you would draw a long line out from the center of the line, and that would be coming out approximately 52 degrees, and that would become T2. And then you go back to the center of the room and put your protractor back down, draw 52 degrees more, draw an imaginary line from the center out 52 more degrees, or 104 degrees from the first line to the edge of the room, wherever that part would be, and you end up with T3, and you repeat this seven times, so you end up with an entire seven different positions. And in each position, you would place an irradiator with the Megor base line, the magnetic north, and the center of the irradiator facing into the room. When you finish, you would end up with seven irradiators, and you've also defined pi, the radius of a circle.
Now, once you have set the system up, system 3 up, you've got your seven irradiators, your first one being T1, pointing towards north, and it's the closest one in the circle towards the north. So just imagine, if you're looking from your ceiling down, now what you've got is you've got a big circle, as big a circle as possible, as you can fit inside this room. Preferably the room is emptied out of all furnishings, with the exception of maybe a few plants and mirrors. And looking down from the top of the room, you see this big circle. And the top part of the circle points to the north. It's magnetic north. And then 52 degrees around the circle is the first irradiator. The bottom of it pointing towards the mag orb is pointing towards magnetic north. The radiator itself is facing in. Then another 52 degrees around. Got another radiator set up. Got the base of the mag orb facing magnetic north, the radiator facing in. All the way around, so you'll end up with seven radiators positioned exactly 52 degrees apart, which defines a circle. Now, in the center of the circle, you would probably place your master crystal and possibly your omnion with your star orb fastened to the top of that. Any other kinds of crystals. What you've got is a cosmic medicine wheel here on one level, and it generates tremendous scalar frequencies. You would connect all of the bases of the mag orbs together and then connect them to one of our large systems power supplies. A large system power supply is a must here now because of the incredible amounts of energy that you're going to be running through the system. And you need to have every cell in your body vitalized. Now, also on each bottom of each irradiator, you would need two local stones, and you would need two pieces of quartz, small quartz points, 5, 6, 7 pound quartz points. And these would be in every, so you'd have 14 of each in the bases of these mega orbs. Then up in the mixing chamber, which is a chamber up above the base part of the mega orb, the higher part, it shows in the diagrams where this is, you would then place a different. I love making this tape series because as I'm working on it, even though I have a semi soundproof recording room, I still hear this horrible noise of jets flying by from the military base nearby. It's quite a ways away, but it's still sound pollution makes me sometimes want to be back on ERA, where all I hear is a saucer go by, and they sound a lot better than this. So anyway, you have these gemstones placed up in the mixing chambers. Now, if you look in the back of Death of Ignorance, you'll see a chart with a gemstone that correlates to each one of the chakras in the body. And so if you want to go forward in time in consciousness, you would start with, by getting energies in the base of the spine going and bring the spinal energy up to the crown chakra. So you got to realize that the earth is turning at 1,000 miles per hour first, and it's turning in the direction of the west towards the east, or it's turning counterclockwise. So what you want to do is go clockwise, the opposite, with your energy fields. Also realize that if it's turning counterclockwise, there are tremendous currents being generated inside the system because of the point in space where the Earth is and you are on the planet is moving 1,000 miles an hour in reference to where the Pleiades are, where other planets are, where the Sun is, where the Moon is. There's a tremendous velocity going on here. That's why the Moon turns at night. There appears to go across the sky and the Sun and all these things. People aren't aware of it. The fact that they're seeing these positions move, but they're also an energy field there that's correlating to a turbulence which can be harnessed. And remember when we talked earlier about the struck zone energies, where the spirit force moves into the chakras on the nadis of the nerves and it strikes, creating a shock wave in the chakra or the nerve ending, which then explodes down through the etheric body, which is coming in through the cells in the body, the nuclear membrane point, where there's little holes in each nuclear membrane of each cell. So there's a tremendous, and of course the cells are reproducing at 50 million per second if you're healthy. So what we're doing is we're starting to play around with these forces now. When this spiritual force strikes the body from the different seven levels, depending on where in the body it's picking up that consciousness to bring it into the bloodstream so that the blood can circulate it through the body, depending on where this is happening, there are certain amounts of energy that's shocked, that's creating, that's stunning you, that's causing you to be gravitated into time, and there are certain amounts of energy that you're escaping with that's freeing you of time. So what you want to do is amplify the escaping energy and transmute the gravity energy to zero. And of course, when you do this, the levitation system three then is going to levitate you. You're coming off the ground. That's one of the side effects that you're going to get when the TM people of America do a lot of research with the system, and they've been real successful in getting people hopping using this technique. And also there's one lady in Hawaii that is been able to levitate almost 30 feet in the air. I do caution you, though, if you go in that direction and you start to go off, we did have this one individual who floated very high in the air and then floated outside the circle, meaning that once she got up to the ceiling level, or as high as the ceiling would allow her to go, she began to drift over to one side of the room outside of this big giant circle that we laid out with the radiators in it. And when she got outside the circle, it broke the field and she fell and did hurt herself severely. So I caution you, when you start playing around with this on this level, this is going to be a side effect for some people. So now what you have to do is you have to activate this energy. So you put gemstones corresponding to the base of the spine, which would be an amethyst. You put the gemstone in time zone 1, which is the one towards magnetic north. Then, of course, you want to activate time zone 2, and you would come up to something like a citron, which would be a stomach area gemstone. And then you'd come up, and that would be in time zone 2. Now you go into time zone 3, going clockwise, which would be the third stationary radiator column. And you would put in there something like something to relate to the heart area of the body, which is coming up in frequency more, which would be blue. So something in the blue, like sapphire, would be good. And you can use the receptors for this if you don't have the gemstones. The quality of the stones and the receptors, whether it be synthetic or natural, doesn't matter. They both work. And you could then go into the throat chakra with T4, with a emerald, and then T5, you could go on into pituitary body with a ruby, and then in T6 you could go into the top of the head with a diamond, and then you could come around to T7 and you could put another diamond in it, or some other white stone or lighter stone, or you could spiral the energy down with a piece of not amethyst, but something like lapis, which would then run the energy back down to blue again. So you create a spiraling effect. And of course, what happens is as the Earth rotates through space and it's being struck, the system has got its strike zones too. Spiritual energy is coming from space also and striking this each irradiator. Each irradiator then is releasing a spiritual chakra mantra energy field. And there's pictures of it in a lot of our literature, what the field looks like. This energy is then striking the struck zones, the target zones and the chakras in the human body, whoever's inside the center of the circle. And of course, because it's being pushed by the big system with this huge power supply on it that we recommend, plus all the power coming from the irradiators, all in the form of scalar type energy, which is a pure form of the energy. It's not being distorted now by ELF and radiation, and it's not being distorted by sound, negative sound waves. Because I would assume that you would have one of our meditation tapes on there, or somebody's meditation tape that has fourth dimensional timbre characteristics like we talked about during the sound session. We have plenty of tapes if you want to use ours. And so then you would use your lasers. You would have lasers firing into the different crystals throughout the system. And what the end result is, your body has got to go into the fourth dimension because you've asked it to. It will go. It doesn't take much encouragement at this point in time with a little bit of a meditation to the point where you could probably not even think about going. You're on your way anyway. And sometimes we get materializations in our systems. I know those of you that are looking at the audio series, you'll see David Tickle. He's on the audio series. He's one of the producers of some big bands like U2 and some of the other big bands. Works a lot with Phil Collins and Rod Stewart, and he's had these kinds of people out there before, and they've had materializations in his system, and he's only got a quad system, meaning he's got 4 radiators. When you get up into 7, you're going to get a lot more results than you will with 4. Also, what happens is when you're working with the system, because it's firing all the chakras so fast, you're going to start vibrating a little bit. And don't be afraid if you get a tingling throughout your body, sort of like your hand going to sleep. It's a form of astral projection. Just go with the feeling. Don't try to block it. Don't be afraid of it. It will gradually consume your body. Some people feel a tremendous calm and then the tingling. Some people feel the tingling and then the calm. It all depends. If you want to program the system like you would a quad system, you could lay in the center of it with a pyramid constructed in the center of it and you could program it just as though you were in a quad system. There's as many things to do with the radiators in the in position. Now, if you're running it through the moon cycles, new moon, full moon cycle, and you wanted to use it just for programming like a quad system, you would put one irradiator towards the center, one irradiator towards the outside, one towards the center, one towards the outside, and swing the Omnion up and down like you normally would in a quad system. For further information on these things we're talking about, I don't expect you to realize all these procedures hearing them from the first time on this tape series, but what I do expect is for you to get a basic understanding of how the system works and not get caught up in the mechanical configurations. We have specialists that will help you. We can network you. There's a million different things we can do once you, if you've gone to this point and you've educated yourself and you've realized and experienced at this level, because this is one of the ultimate experiences I feel you can have on this planet with our technology as it exists for the general public at this point in time. Now, there are other things you can do with the system. For example, when we had the last Great Earth Day, I believe it was several years ago, we were on top of the tower on top of the San Francisco, it was the old Cathedral Hill Hotel. I think this was called Cathedral Hill, now it's called the Jack Tar Hotel, or it was vice versa. But anyway, we had a large room rented up there, and what we did is we had a huge group, and we had a set of radiators, so we had seven radiators set up in about a 30-foot circle. And what we did is we put all of the radiators pointing, rather than pointing in and out, we put them all in one direction, and that direction was clockwise. So, I mean, we had every irradiator face every other irradiator. So if you were standing on the outside of the circle, they would all be facing the direction of the circle if you were looking clockwise. Then we took the group, and we had about 15 or 20, maybe 30 people, and we had the group run counterclockwise around the irradiator, system on the outside of the irradiators. And we had them like jogging out there. And it was real interesting in the fact that a lot of people started to achieve levitation in the group. Instead of making like a 6-foot stride, they were making 8-foot strides. The Tibetans call this phenomenon the 60-foot leaps. And you can develop it, and the whole group was doing it. And of course, when you're working with group energy, it's a lot easier and a lot quicker to accomplish these, what I call superphysical feats. You can do it sometimes in one afternoon, whereas on an individual basis, it might take 2 or 3 months, because your body has to be taught a lot of new things. And of course, working with a system over a period of time, your body will be taught a lot of things, because gradually, the hormone manufacture and secretion in the body changes. And as this change takes place, what happens is your body genetically mutates in the direction that it should have genetically mutated, towards a higher beingness and a higher consciousness. And unfortunately, we're not, as I've said many times before, because it's a polluted environment, we're not even beginning to realize our superphysical capabilities. What we're starting to do is barely survive. And this is so stupid, because we should all be superphysical beings now. That's what we are. We should be realizing that. So the System 3 helps you realize that. And you can position the radiators in many different directions and do many different things. The sky is the limit. And what I always do when people get to this level, I like to network them with other people, because I don't know very much about the system myself, except that it works. It works well, and it works, and they're all over the world. And I've seen people do things far greater in capacity than I've been able to do, because I'm so busy, I don't have the time to spend in my own system. I'm too busy developing them and educating people on how they work to really get in and enjoy them. And the third problem that I have is that my house isn't big enough to hold one. I only have a quad system. Someday when I have a larger house, I'm going to have a huge system. And I've even entertained the idea of stacking systems, meaning that if I had a large enough room, I would set up 7 radiators as the first circle. And then I would set up more than 7 on the next circle, and more than 7, and on the third circle I would put even more radiators. I would have 3 rows of radiators and megorbs all aligned to magnetic north, facing in or out, or you could have them alternate directions, one circle facing in, the next one out, and the next one it's against itself, and the other one counterclockwise. And I would stack these radiators in the Fibonacci series, meaning that if I had looked at a pine cone, for example, which might have 3 pine cones, and then on one circuit, on 5 on another, and then 8 on another, and then 13 on another. I would do the same thing with the radiators. I would work up a configuration that was working with the chakras, look at the spokes on the chakras of what I wanted to accomplish, because realize that every single chakra in your body has spokes, and what we're trying to really do is change the struck zone energy into which normally turns into gravity and bonding into the third dimension. You're trying to change that struck zone energy into spiritual energy and free it into the fourth dimension. So you would tune up the chakras that you really want to pound on, where your blockages were the greatest, in order to release this energy. So there's no limit to what you could do with two or three of these systems staggered together. Now that's just the beginning of what system three can do. Now we have another type of system also, which is called the fire star. And the fire star can be just as exciting. It takes up a lot less space than system three. Now the fire star is not designed to get you levitating or get you in and out of dimensions per se, but it's designed to develop your psychic resources so that you can become a contactee or a channel or a clairvoyant or whatever you want. Now, you may already be all of those things already. Then what the fire star will do for you is make it a lot easier for you to perform these functions. Now, the fire star works with the system or with the body, and instead of working on 7 chakras to 10 chakras like the system 3 is, the fire star works on 4 chakras at one time. 4 of them. So that it has 4 chambers, and each chamber, what you end up doing is putting in the appropriate gemstones to work with the chakras that you want to work with. And the chakras that are, in order to become a spiritual channel, you wouldn't just work with any chakra. You'd find the ones that are blocking you, because when you start channeling, it's not a set thing to say open up crown, the alta major center, and the brow chakra and the base of the spine. It's not a set thing to do that. Those may already be open, and you may have a problem in your heart chakra or in the gonad area. There's any different area that may be blocking you on the very high part of your body. Your crown might be just fine, whereas somebody else may have a problem. Their body chakras might be working good, but their crown is blocked. So you've got to find out which area that you need to develop. And we have a lady named Mrs. Terry that will do this. She's our spiritual consultant for the company. I'll give you her phone number in a little bit. I have to look it up. Currently in my studio here, I don't have it handy. But we had one experience. One girl is a singer, and she was working in her singing career, and she developed a blockage in her throat, which caused her upper octaves in her, she had like a hole in her voice in her octave range. And we had a fire star built for her, tuned into the throat chakra and pituitary area where she was blocked. You know, a lot of times when we do muscle testing, for example, the person is overweight for a receptor, and you would assume that when you muscle test somebody for a receptor that's overweight, that they're going to test strong on the thyroid or the emerald. But a lot of times they'll test strong on the pituitary, because the weight problem is back up the chain of command a little bit further to the pituitary area, which is a tropic hormone center which regulates the thyroid gland. Well, this is the same problem this girl had. She had a pituitary problem that was affecting her throat. And so when we tuned the fire star orb to tune her vibratory rate to her throat frequencies, you know, through the control center, her in one session with the fire star, her voice changed. Now when she goes out on tour, she's so impressed with it, and doing a major recording deal right now, and the whole world will see her soon. I'm designing a huge fire star for her to put on stage to turn the whole audience on. And like I said earlier, when I was in Europe, I met my wife because I was playing a concert, and we had a fire star orb set up in Marno in Bavarian Alps, and while I was playing the frequencies of the Pleiadian sounds into the fire star with 500 people concentrating, it invoked a lot of flying saucers. It takes about 3 months for this phenomenon to happen if you're tuning it to the extraterrestrial frequencies. We find that, for example, I put one up in Oldenburg, Germany, and a guy named Werner had it up there, and He had it for a long time. He had it for almost 2.5 months, and he called me up and he says, I haven't seen any extraterrestrials or have any sightings yet. And I says, Warner, how long have you had it now? And he says, 2.5 months. And I says, you know, you Germans are a little impatient. And I says, just wait a little longer. Exactly on the third month, on the 90th day that he installed that system, he called me up, and I was in Munich at my distributor's office over there, and he said, Fred, I don't know how to tell you this, but we had the sighting, and it was, today's the anniversary of the third month. And he says, not only did we see it, he said, half the town of Oldenburg saw it. It made the front page of the newspaper, and we videotaped it, and it was real interesting, because later on in the seminar, when I saw him, he gave me the videotapes, which I presently have in my possession, of this flying saucer flying right down the freeway by his house, or the autobahn, I should say. Then we had another incident. We were up, we were staying next door to Jack Nicholson at a friend's house in Aspen, Colorado, and we had one set there, and it brought in a ship. The whole town saw it. It was in the Aspen Times. This was in about 1982. Then I went up there with David Tickle in 1986 just to visit the place, and we took a photograph by the old house, even though the Firestar wasn't there anymore. And strangely enough, when we developed the photograph, four ships showed up in it. So the energy was still there, and it was interesting because I put that picture in our catalog, in our current catalog, on the second page. You'll see the picture of the four ships. They're just coming out of like a cloud screen, and I remember I had one of Billy Myers' pictures showed a Semyonov ship just hiding itself in some clouds, and you could see the outline of the ship very clearly. It wasn't like one of these renticular clouds at all. It was definitely the outline of the ship in there. I got that picture in my possession too. So we've had a tremendous amount of fun with the Firestars. Now, another thing about them is they're like a receptor, like a giant receptor. Let's say that you had a blockage in four chakras. Mrs. Terry told you what those blockages were. You use the Firestar. You tune the Firestar to remove the problem of the four blockages. You remove this. The problem stayed removed for 6 months, and suddenly you weren't getting the results with the Firestar that you thought you should be getting at that point. Time. So what you would do then is you would retune the Firestar to the next vibratory frequency up from where you were tuned it last, and move on again in the chakra experience. And a little later on, I'm going to play a excerpt from one of my radio shows that I used to have on KFOX in Long Beach for a long time. Actually, Hermosa Beach. We moved over to Hermosa, but there's a conversation that I had on the air one night about a Firestar in an experience, and I want to share that with you a little later on. The Firestar, my wife likes to teach classes on it. We have a backup unit. I've done some more research with it, we've developed a backup plate for the Firestar. And what the backup plate does is it's called a shield. It concentrates the energy into a more focal point. The Firestar is hung normally on the wall at something like about a 40 to 50 degree angle. And depending on where you're positioning yourself on the ground, you point the Firestar at you, so it centers directly on you. So in the position of your meditation or where you're utilizing it, when you look up, you'll be looking directly into the focal point of the Firestar. Those of you that haven't seen one, they're about 6 feet by 6 feet, like a giant cross almost, except they're positioned at a 45-degree angle, as where a cross would be vertical. Of course, the Firestar also generates the same frequencies as a flower, and so does the systems three. All of these systems generate the etheric frequencies of the flower, and so cats like to lie in them. Sometimes friendly bees are attracted to them. Fun thing about it is that lower form insects that don't correspond to harmonic vibratory frequencies, like certain kinds of ants and moths, which don't, and flies, they're repelled by the Firestar and the systems three.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.
Well, we'll turn this puppy over here real quick and continue right along. We don't want to miss any time here. This thing might run a little bit longer today, but seeing as we got this new schedule, it's going to run the whole hour and let everybody listen to it. So, as we are moving on, this is very interesting. I could talk all day. What this year's seminar will talk more about this stuff, but pretty amazing things that are going on.
of the things you heard me mention earlier is the device that I got from Semyasi in 1982 called the Omnion. And it is used with our systems because it's a doorway opening. It behaves sort of like the laser does in the fact that it is a doorway to different dimensions. It uses it as an interdimensional doorway in our system. For example, in the systems 3, with the 7 radiators, we place it right in the center, and we move it up and down with the moon cycles. Even though it helps relieve the energy, the negative energy that comes through on the master crystal, the Omnion also brings a positive energy down from the fourth dimension to the astral plane. We use it as a radionic transmitting device also with a single system. Like if you're set up with a self-help system with one radiator, you would mount the Omnion behind the single radiator at the exact center point, and you would have the radiator point away from the Omnion towards you. So it would be the Omnion hanging, then the radiator pointing towards you, and then you on a bed where you're sleeping or a pyramid where you're meditating in or whatever. It provides a constant output of energy of even polarity both day and night, so it stabilizes the hydrogen atom frequencies in the body that are always, even though they're switching through their normal phase of the morning to the afternoon to night to midnight to the next day, the sound and polarity light shift that takes place in the hydrogen atom is occurring. It's stabilized when this is. According to Semyasi, this device taps into the powers beyond the parameters of our physical universe. This design, of course, was given to me back on Christmas Day in 1982. There's several of these Omnions in the world. We use several different types of crystal configurations with them now. We use amethyst in the center, and we use Arkansas quartz in the top part and the bottom part of it. And sometimes we will use South American quartz in the bottom part now, and Arkansas quartz in the top, which gives it a clockwise, counterclockwise, or figure eight type of energy field when it's put into operation. Because remember, the water goes counterclockwise south the equator, and any crystal formed in that area, because silicon dioxide has a lot of water in it, crystal, of course, is formed in water, it's going to have an opposite counter-rotating polarity field to it. So the two polarities working through amethyst, one positive, one negative, is a tremendous field or rush into these parameters that are beyond our physical universe. We use lasers with it. Lasers work very well with the Omnion. A typical system will have 10, 15, 20 lasers in it. And it's not that expensive to put that many lasers in. People think, well, that costs a lot, but it doesn't. When you start seeing the results of that many lasers and what you can do with a system, it's truly amazing. The Omnion is one of my favorite things. We usually, when we do seminars, we try to have one with us. They're difficult to construct. They're hand-built, and it takes several hours to build one. It's not something you can just throw together overnight. Another thing that happened to me when I was living in Germany, I've always been working in veils. Now, of course, all these different devices that we make will help bring down a veil. And a veil is what I talked about earlier before the meditation and during. It's just an energy field that where mass consciousness hasn't been able to reach with their eyesight yet. And eventually when the energy field goes into the veil, the eyesight of mankind opens and he physically sees through higher occult more eyes, you might say. And you can teach your body to see up onto the etheric planes with a device that we developed to help speed this process up called the Champagne Reflector. Now, I first got the idea for it when I was living at Ammersee Lake in Germany back in 1987 or 88. And when I was living there, one night we were, this is a up in the Bavarian Alps, and this is a lake where we lived on the middle, in the middle of a lake, on the edge of the middle of a lake. The lake's about 10 miles long, maybe about 4 or 5 miles wide. Big, long, narrow lake, and we were right in the center of it. Well, about 2.5 miles out into the middle of the lake, one day appeared this, in the evening rather, appeared this huge, very large fog bank about 200 feet high, but it just went through the center of the lake, meaning you could see clearly out to the fog bank, which went from one end of the lake to the other, and you could see beyond the fog bank on the other side. And on the other side of the fog bank was the moon, and the moon was shining into the fog bank, which was probably maybe a quarter of a mile or an eighth of a mile tall, 2 miles out and 10 miles long in the center of this lake. It was like a giant, somebody put a giant movie screen in the middle of the lake. It was a very, very unusual phenomenon for me anyway. Maybe for Germany it's common, but I'd never seen anything like that before. The moon, of course, was behind it, so it gave the appearance of a backlit movie screen in the center of a lake. It was the length of the lake. And, of course, this lake is very long and very old, rather, and it was probably formed back when the Ice Age was going across the Earth. A lot of those little lakes in Europe were formed during that time, so they're million-year-old crater-type lakes. Well, anyway, I saw this huge bunch of this army of knights riding across the lake on the screen, actually in the screen, and they were riding like they were going from the north to the south, and they had lances, and they were holding the lances straight up, and they had suits of armor on, and they had flags on their lances, but I couldn't read the insignias on the flags. You know, there's some pretty famous lakes, and there were some pretty famous battles fought back during the medieval times around these lakes. So what I figured is it was just some kind of a time shift had taken place, and we were and what was being projected up on this screen or this fog bank was an image of a battle that had taken place a long time ago. So I went in to get my wife, wake her up, but so she could see it too, but she was in a very deep sleep. By the time I got her awake, this phenomenon had passed and transpired. It was really amazing. So I decided, whatever the conditions, there had to be certain astrological conditions prevalent during the full moon with the lake the way it was, the fog bank the way it was, to make it possible to see all these things happen. So I did some channeling the next day, and I said, why not develop a device that will speed this condition up in the human instrument to the point that even though the conditions aren't quite right for this to happen naturally, you might be able to see it anyway. Or when I say conditions quite right for it to happen naturally, for it naturally to be projected to a lower mind on the physical plane. Same thing had happened a few years before that when I was up in Aspen, Colorado at Bluebells, and the sannyasi had led me up the mountain pass and showed me an etheric city that was up there. And of course the road was shut off because those roads up in the upper Rocky Mountain area get shut off because the snow, they can't, there's too deep of snow, and so these roads are empty, and so you end up going across these mountaintops at night on foot, and you won't see another soul for 10 miles because all the roads are closed, nobody lives there anyway. Well, I found this etheric city that she showed me, and it was real interesting, and the fact that it was guarded by white wolves, and I was able to see the city lights from a distance across the field. And she said, I could tell that if I had been fearful of this, the wolves would probably have been a menace, but I knew that everything was okay, and the wolves stayed at a great distance, but they were there, and you could hear them howl from time to time, see them in the moonlight. It was a bright moon that night, too. Seems like that during the full moon period, these etheric veils come down. The full moon period is not the best time to do New Age kinds of things for programming and that, but it really is a great time to see all kinds of interesting etheric and astral phenomenon going on that become somewhat visible and illuminated. And, of course, as I say, as more mass mind becomes illuminated, the more of these things are going to become apparent, and those of us that are using things like the champagne reflector are going to be leading the pack, and we're going to be seeing things long before others do. And other people are starting to have these experiences. Another example of the veils would be over in the area of Avalon, in the place where Avalon used to exist and King Arthur lived, in Cornwall, England, and across the Salisbury Plains over there. That whole area was once, there was a lot of series of lakes, and the Tor, I guess, is still there because we have it in our video series. You can actually see the Glastonbury Tor. But at one point, this was like an island, and you'd have to cross the lake to get to it. And when you cross the lake with one consciousness, you'd end up at a lamasery where the old monks were working. And if you'd cross the same lake and land at the same exact spot in another veil, another consciousness, you'd end up in Avalon where Morgan Le Fay and Vivian and Merlin and all these people sort of lived. So here's another situation that was very famous about veils and changing consciousness and getting slightly out of dimension. And the same thing, of course, I pointed out earlier is Shambhala on White Island. Also, is a very good area and a good consciousness to study. So the champagne reflector, it goes into your house. It's kind of an automated device. When it's permanently installed, it has a large piece of double terminated quartz cluster in it. And when it, we always tell people to mount it in their living rooms or bedrooms, wherever they want it, at this highest possible position that they can get in the house, because it seems to work good in a high point in the house. And what we do is we hook a laser some distance away from it and point the laser directly at the stone that's inside the champagne reflector. And we put the laser on a timer so that when the sun sets, the laser goes on. And when the sun rises, the laser goes off. And we adjust the timer. You can buy these timers at any hardware store. Turn the laser off and on. We adjust the timer to compensate for the summer, the longer days in the summer, and the shorter days in the winter. And what happens over a period of time with this energy field constantly going on and off like it does, it starts to change your consciousness and your awareness, and it starts to lift your visual abilities to see in other dimensions. And it's really neat. Sometimes I'll get up in the middle of the night and go into the living room, because I have to go through the living room or by the living room to get to the kitchen to get a midnight snack, and I'll see this thing on, and it's tremendous, the effect that you feel around it, the things that you see around it. And I've got in my slideshows that people see during the light show, we've actually seen angels materialize inside the quartz, fly out of the quartz, and move across the room. We've actually been able to film this, and I have it in my slideshow at the seminars. So these are some of the kinds of things that you can do with a champagne reflector. It's another device strictly to help the body realize its ability to see through veils, but it works very conjunctly with all of our systems equipment. I mentioned earlier, I've talked about the systems three, the quad system, the pyramid over the bed, the Omnion, and the champagne reflector. I just want to briefly get back into the Firestar Orb. The Firestar Orb is an excellent system also to use at night in your sleeping area. It's tremendously intense. It might be a little bit intense to sleep in over a long period of time, or some people find it a great place to sleep by occasionally. In our case, we have a separate room for the Firestar, and people occasionally sleep by it. But what I want to do is, back a few years ago, I had a radio show in K-Fox, which I mentioned earlier, and I want to play a little excerpt about the Firestar Orb now, so that you can, I think I brought some good points out, and I was going through my old radio series while I was reviewing and putting this tape together. So I think you'll find in it a lot of good information. So now we're going to take a break from this part of the tape and go listen to one of my old radio shows.
And it is now a few minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, which means your Talk Alternative now continues with Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Now live from Laguna Beach, California, here is Dr. Fred Bell. Good morning, Dr. Bell.
Good morning, Jim. How are we doing today?
We are doing fine. How are the rains?
Oh, it's pretty nice. It's not really raining right now, but it sure has been. And it sure is nice seeing that, you know, last year we only had like one day of rain.
Yes.
And this year we're having many.
Well, I hope we get a lot. I like rain.
Yeah, I do too. It's lots of a good source of negative ions. And plus, it raises the vibration of everything up a whole lot.
I don't know if you had a chance to catch any of the Elizabeth show this morning.
Yeah, I heard a little bit of it this morning.
We had quite a seminar last night on, you know, my favorite subject.
I know. It sounds like it was a real crazy one, huh?
It was wild. I've got a very interesting tape I'm going to be playing on the air in a couple weeks, or maybe when I get back from my vacation in Chicago, that I think you're going to be interested in.
Oh, sounds good. What's the tape about?
I think I've told you and our listeners know a little bit about the UFO landing outside RAF Bentwaters. Well, this is a tape of the commanding officer of that base at the time.
Uh-huh.
Making his investigation, and he put his investigation as he was making it in the field on cassette.
Right.
It was done at night. You hear the investigation going on. All of a sudden, the commanding officer and his men spot mysterious lights.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And it is extremely dramatic. And we'll, I don't know if the CNN is doing a story on this also. They may beat us to the punch, but certainly they're the ones that have really helped Larry Fawcett, the original investigator in the case, unearth so much. And anyway, we can look forward to that.
When you play that, I'll get one of my Semyasi tapes with the sounds of the Pleiadian ships that we've played on the air here a couple times.
And we'll do a little mix. mix or something, huh?
Yeah, we'll just put a little special effects on the maybe we should use that for an opener for my show.
Now that would be interesting.
I've been wanting to put a special effects tape together for a long time, just to have it on my show, just to wake people up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of fun. I remember when we did Aspen, I did Pepke Auditorium in Aspen, Colorado, back in 79, I think it was. We had a situation like you guys had last night. The place holds 1,200. We had to turn 600 away, and we had 1,800 in there. That's how hungry people are for UFO information. It's amazing.
Well, again, it was quite a situation. We had, it looked like the opening of 2010. I mean, people were wrapped around the block, and there was a lot of confusion and stuff. And again, I'd like to publicly thank everyone that came last night, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, I hope that everybody later on, when in about 2 or 3 weeks, when I've come out with my new catalogs, which we're in the process of doing now, in them are pictures, you know, photographs of some of the exotic systems that we've used around the world for these kinds of things. And some of the people are would be considered very well-known public central figures that are using the systems but want to remain anonymous. But some of the equipment that they're using will be pictured in their new systems catalog and is now becoming available. I've had 2 or 3 devices that I really haven't made available to what I would call my general following in the UFO area. One of them is a unit that's quite large. It's a unit called a Firestar Orb. You've never seen anything like it. It wouldn't even fit in your studio because it's too big. It wouldn't go through the door. But it's a device that works a whole lot like, you know, how a flower attracts at a certain point the bee to it to do the pollination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this device was given to me by the extraterrestrials quite a few years ago. In this design, and there's only been probably 5 or 6 of them ever built in the whole world. And one of them was installed up in the house in Winding Way up in Malibu, a huge home way up over the cliffs. And the guy that put it in kind of knew what he was doing, but he really didn't. He sort of wanted to believe it, but he couldn't believe it could happen to him. And this device uses, in the center of it, it's like a giant cross. You know, those radiators in my living room?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's like a giant cross there. And this cross, it's in that shape of the radiator, but on each corner of the arm of the cross is a octahedral chamber formed of 24-karat gold pyramid. And the cross itself is structured in and it has the stainless steel wires, so it has a high-tension suspension, so you can touch these wires, and it sounds like a sitar. It's a very high tension, so the whole thing is like a huge crystal. And in the very center part of it, we put a diamond in it. It has diamonds in it, like 2 and 3 carat flawless-cut diamonds are suspended, once again, on a very tight suspension made up of a special wax-covered thread. And the whole system is carried up to about a 30,000 volt charge. And in each one of these quadrants of the octahedrons on each one of the corners of the unit has different gemstones. We'll put sapphires, rubies, emeralds, opals, whatever, all the way around. So we'll have 4 different opposing stones on each of the corner quadrants and this huge diamond that we use in the center. And then it's charged. And it's suspended at sort of it's not exactly, you know, hung on the wall at a straight up and down position, like a completely vertical position. It's tilted back so that if you stood away from it, it would be looking at you, yet the back of the thing would be pointing up into space. And then what we do is we fire in this case, in the beginning days of these things, we were using a helium neon laser. And the helium neon laser, the first one we did was up at Aspen, Colorado. We shoot the helium neon laser right directly into the diamond in the center. And what happens is the diamond in the center then diffuses the energy, and certain amounts of it hit these different 4 different stones in the outer quadrants of the unit. This then sets up a resonant pattern that begins to oscillate and vibrate, and it increases energy at a pretty high rate of speed. And an analogy to that would be looking in the human body at the base of the spine, at the lowest chakra, the root chakra. We have what's called a 4-petal lotus. And what that means is there are four glands, the adrenals, the spleen, the liver, and the kidneys, that work in conjunction with one another in the bottom of the human body. And when these organs are stimulated by certain kinds of coherent radiation, which we were talking about yesterday, they cause a flow of cerebral spinal fluid to begin to move up through the bone networks, the spinal column networks, up through the base of the spine. And finally, this spinal network, this fluid, which has been released from the bottom of the spine, reaches a point at the base of the brain, at the cerebellum. Then what happens is the brain opens up. It changes its resistance. In other words, there's a certain amount of resistance when you're waking up in the morning. Your brain, you know, seems clear once you get going and the adrenaline gets up there, versus at the end of the day, you've had a lot of input and you can hardly, you know, you're kind of foggy.
Mine works just the opposite.
Well, okay, because you're polarized backwards. But anyway, what happens is the resistance inside the brain changes when this adrenaline comes in. And what happens is the neurons in the brain then start switching at different speeds, which then links human consciousness to higher octaves into the universe. It's like, this would be like a comparison of that would be someone taking LSD or psilocybin. It causes a change because LSD and psilocybin will mock up or fake out the brain as far as the serotonin structure is concerned, because they look very similar to it. But what happens is the consciousness of the user actually changes. But in the case of adrenaline or the movement of the kundalini, this is a natural change. It's not a drug-related change. It's an automatic change that takes place, which then sends out or causes a person, in the case of consciousness, to be aware, to have a cosmic awareness, to have the third eye open, to have all these things happening. And then what happens is electromagnetic energies move with less and less resistance up and down the spinal column, so that you end up with a screening across the entire gray matter of these electromagnetic energies. It's almost like a waveform. So what happens is the gray matter is now illuminated or activated or turned on or switched on or lit up or whatever your terminology would be. And so this then causes the consciousness of the body to become awakened into this higher realm of knowledge. Now, in the case of a lot of ET contacts, a lot of these people that have been contacted on a what I would call a steady basis and have been proven to be credible type of contactees have gone through this change. Like, for example, when the Montgomery lady writes about those books on ETs and Brad Steiger, all of these people have had some kind of higher awakening. Well, the Firestar orb works on the principle of the excitation field, whereby this energy is moved up the base of the spine. But instead of moving it up the base of the spine, because this is something that's suspended in a building, it causes the entire building to start vibrating using the core frequencies of the earth. And so when the core frequencies of the earth are tapped into by this kind of a device, what happens is it sends out like a beacon out into space. It goes all the way out. You know, it's quite interesting the way this thing works. This beacon then sets up an energy that if the, you know, the locality is such that it could handle this kind of energy, somehow or other a veil that is lifted, and there's a lot more UFO activity. You know, in some cases, for example, people that have opened astral vision, for example, could see a UFO, and another person standing right next to them couldn't see it. Yet you could have two or three people agreeing that they're actually seen or have seen a UFO, and one or two people that haven't seen anything. And the ones that saw it, it might have been just like a very quick flash, because motion in and out of the astral plane is like breathing, but it takes very quickly. In other words, it takes place very quickly, this actual breath of the universe, our own breathing cycle. If you realize how quick the moment that you breathe in and you start breathing out, there's a very fast transaction between the moment you let the air out and the moment it starts coming in. In other words, the rate, the diaphragm. Now, the diaphragm, for example, in the body could move very slowly, but because it's a large surface area located at the base of the lungs. But looking at the passageways, the small passageways whereby the high velocity of the air comes into the nose, the switching speed and the velocity of the hair going through the venturi of the nose is quite high in relationship to the speed of the diaphragm. It's the same thing that happens with some of these UFO sightings when they move onto the physical and onto the astral and back and forth. So you have to be somewhat attuned to this to actually see it, unless it's a, you know, a full-blown knockout, drag-out sighting like we do occasionally have, where masses of people, you know, are just there and they're seeing it, because it's just a complete drop from that higher plane into this dimension that we're in now, which we're getting more and more of those sightings. So these are the kinds of things that have to be taken into consideration. I remember back when we were doing spoon bending classes up at Lake Tahoe, we would have sometimes we would have witnesses to our class. And when Lawrence Kennedy or one of the students would get up there and bend the spoon, you know, some people would come to our classes and they would be taking the classes, but other people, their friends, would be there for part of the class, and they would just be utter disbelievers. In their mind, it was absolutely impossible for them to witness the phenomenon of a spoon being bent by mental energy. And so what would happen is Lawrence would sometimes grab the spoon for a skeptic, put it right in front of his face, and the moment that spoon would bend, the person would blink their eyes, they would turn their heads, or they would become distracted. I've seen that time and time again, and we would talk about that phenomenon. And that person's spirit just isn't ready to witness that degree of advancement, because that is almost like an initiation when you actually begin to see this happening. The same thing happens with the extraterrestrials because of our relationship in the universe right now. Some people just aren't ready for it. Some people try to be ready for it. They get caught in the fever of the group and in the enthusiasm of the group. But when the actual encounter comes, they can't be there. They have to leave. They have to come and then leave right away. There's a million different excuses that people will conjure up because they're really not ready for that fast vitality or that high vitalizing of their bodies yet. They're still working out earthly karma. So anyway, the Fire Star was one application of the laser, and if we put one in Hawaii. But anyhow, getting back up to the one in Malibu, when we installed that one, that was number two, the second one to ever be built in this world. This guy that I put it in his house, he was a big businessman over in Century City. And one of the guys that was working with him was a medical doctor. He was probably one of the most grounded out medical doctors that I've ever met. He was a nice guy, you know, these nice guy type, very professional, but not even about to hear anything that he didn't want to hear, or if it wasn't written in a medical textbook. This guy could barely handle vitamins, you know. He believed they were good, but he didn't know why, because they don't teach nutrition. And he was very grounded out. Well, one morning about, I guess it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, I got this call. And you got to realize that this doctor was like the kind of guy that after 8 o'clock, he never called you, because he was like totally respective of people's time, and he never called you before, say, 8 o'clock in the morning. Here I get a call at 3 o'clock in the morning, and this guy is on the phone. He sounds like he's having a nervous breakdown, you know. And I asked him, I said, John, what are you calling me at 3 o'clock in the morning? This is completely out of your character pattern. And he's like freaked, and he says, Fred, I didn't believe you, but now I do. Because what had happened is some kind of a UFO had come up the coast from Malibu, from Point Dune down there, where they first saw it, because they were, I guess, having a couple of drinks or something late at night. It came up and came outside the house, and this house was like sitting by itself on about 20 acres of land, and this thing proceeded to go around the house, and the house had like skylights in it, and there was a red glow coming down through the skylights into the house. At first they said they felt something, and they looked up at the machine because the laser was bright red where it hit that diamond. It was glowing. But then they looked out the skylights, and they thought that outside the skylights was a continuation of the reflection of the diamond being struck by this red laser. But it wasn't. It was this outside vehicle that was feeding back red light back into it. And another interesting experience that we had happen was up at Aspen. And this is where we got into... We learned how to transmit back and forth. This is back in the early days of, you know, what I would call heavy group communication. We built a machine. I've got pictures of it here. We were up in an area called Bluebell, right up by a pyramid, a place called Pyramid Peak. And we were up about 9,500 feet up. And we had a series of irradiators, and one of these fire stars pointed out at this point over the Pyramid Peak. And we began to see some lights up there. It was too far away to make out any physical size of the craft that we saw. We could just see some lights that were in a pattern, and they were quite a bit brighter than Jupiter. And this was an evening when we were experimenting around with the ionizer, but it wasn't like an ordinary ionizer that you've seen. This was like a 50 kV ionizer, and we were pulsating it. We were actually turning it off and on with a key switch so that the entire system built up a field and then dropped the field. And we found that if we could pulse it three or four times, the twinkle or the lights out above the Pyramid Peak would absolutely go into the same pattern. So we began to establish this transmission pattern back and forth. And this was not a mental type communication. This was hard physical communication. And the next morning in the Aspen paper carried a large article about these mysterious lights that had been seen hovering over the town that night. So these are just a couple of the experiences that we've had with the things like the Fire Star. So I finally decided I might as well make it available to a few more people.
Dr. Bell, before we continue with that, I would like to take a time out for something that is very important. That is a word from Excalibur. We'll be right back with more of Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show right after this.
This seminar series is continued on the next tape.